Welcome to the Amanda Rollard Show, where we work together to support abundant living in all areas of your life, body, mind, family, finances, and community. Come join us and get your salt back.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Amanda Rollard Show. I am so happy that you stopped by here in this third week of January 2024, and I am super excited to have the guest that I have today. You know that I come from the education industry, was a teacher and administrator, and we're going to get to interview and talk to Dixie Cooper. She is a retired teacher who embarked on a second career in acting upon her retirement. And I think her story is inspirational. I think her journey is something that we can all aspire to, because no matter what time that we start to water those seeds that God planted deep inside of us, we start to have transformation happening in our life, and we can influence and see transformation occurring to those around us. So stick around. I think you're going to find this interview with Dixie to be inspiring and great for the start of living our abundant life in 2024. See ya in just a few. Welcome back, everybody. And I am so excited to bring a very special guest to the show today. Her name is Dixie Cooper. Dixie, can you say hello to the audience, please?
Yes, hello. Good morning. Hope everybody's warm on this cold January day.
Oh my gosh, isn't it? So how cold is it where you are?
I think the last time I looked, it was 28 degrees.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so that's actually pretty decent. When we woke up this morning, it was like 19. In Texas, you know, anything below freezing, nobody knows how to drive. We don't know how to function.
Very true. Very true. I know.
So it's a good day to be inside, and what a great day to have an interview, don't you think?
Yes, perfect day. Can't go outside, so we might as well have conversations.
We might as well have some girl talk, right? We did have some conversation, you know, of course, prior to today. We were connected by a mutual friend, and I wanted to bring you on the show today, Dixie, so you could share your story. It is quite inspirational. And on the show, we totally strive to support abundant living today in our lives. And in our lives, abundance and health, we need that in five different areas. We need healthy minds. We need healthy bodies. We need healthy families. We need healthy work environments. And we need healthy communities. And I was just so inspired by your story that I wanted you to share it, because I think two things hit home to me is that you were a teacher, and I say were. I think when we're a teacher, we're always a teacher. Don't you agree?
Well, yes, to a certain degree. I agree with you. Yes.
Yeah, we're always there. We're always going to teach something. But then also, we're going to really dive into that seed that I believe was planted inside of you for a career in acting. And I can't wait to explore this with the audience on how you actually found your way here into that realm after retirement. So are you ready to go with this thing?
I'll tell that story. Yes.
Okay. Awesome. Okay. So before we kind of get there, I would love for you to tell the audience a little bit about yourself. You know, what was your career path? And obviously it was in education. So how did that get started years ago?
Years ago, I was hired as a helper in a kindergarten. And I was there for a while, and it struck me I really was enjoying this. I was enjoying those children, and I decided maybe I don't want to be the helper. I want to be the teacher. I think I'm a late bloomer in most everything throughout my life, because I was about 30 years old when I decided that. And I went back to school and got teaching credentials, and I taught kindergarten for about 10 years. After that, I decided it was time for a change. Kindergarten was wonderful. I loved it in many, many ways. It was also the hardest job I've ever had in my life. It was very, very demanding. And I think I was just ready for a new change. And one thing about teaching, it does offer a lot of variety. You can do a lot of different types of teaching within that career. And I was at a program for pregnant and parenting students for about 8 years. It was a program to help them graduate from high school. We had a child care center. I taught parenting classes and childbirth education classes. I had a background in childbirth education as well, plus the kindergarten experience. So it all kind of fit together to do this, to teach what I knew about children and childbirth to these teenagers. So, and that was quite rewarding. I did that for about 8 years. But before that, I had gotten a degree in history. And I'd always thought, well, before I'm done with this, I'd really like to pursue that as well. So I went back to school again, got a master's in history. I had a bachelor's in history, but just decided I better update this and got a master's in history. And I taught history for about 3 years at the high school level. And then I taught it at the community college for about 14 years as an adjunct faculty member. And so that was, in a nutshell, my teaching career. But then with the acting, my brother is an actor, and he has been since he was two. He was truly born to be an actor. I'd watched him grow up doing this. I've been to a lot of plays watching him do this. And I like plays anyway. I would go to them all the time myself. And one day, went to visit a friend who was in a play. She was an old high school friend. I'd known her forever. And so she gets up, there was a comedy. She was having a great time up there. And I thought, that looks like fun. That just really looks like fun. I want to try that. So I came home, and it so happened the community college around here offers courses for seniors. Just about anything you can imagine, you can go and sign up to take the course there. It's really a great program. But I was seeing their list of classes, and I thought, I want to try something I've never tried. And then I thought about the dramas, and I said, I wonder if they have that. And they did. They have a drama class. So I signed up for that. And the problem is, I got addicted. I loved it. It was just more, you know, I thought I'd just go have a good time, but I really loved it. And I couldn't wait to go back. And after a while, I got kind of curious about, you know, how do I go beyond this? You know, should I go for an audition? And I did. And my first audition was, I don't know if it was a disaster, but I didn't get the part, needless to say, and not surprising. But it's still, the bug was there. And so I just kept pursuing this class. I looked at other classes. I studied on my own. The first play I was really in was a few of the people from the class wanted to do a play. So we kind of did it on our own. And we just picked this, the teacher picked a play for us. She picked out a director for us, who was also one of the students. We kind of, I don't know if we were supposed to use this space or not, but we did. We kind of just went in and used it anyway. It's called a black box, which is a type of smaller theater. And we had it there. We just invited friends and family. It wasn't anything other than that, but we had a blast. It was so much fun. And we had a great time putting on this little play. It was only about a 20-minute play, but it was really fun. So after that, I just went on more auditions. I finally did get a role. My first role was in a play called Arsenic and Old Lace. And there was a character called Mr. Witherspoon. It was actually written as a man to be this part. He is a director of a mental asylum, I guess you would call it. At any rate, I went to it and I auditioned, and I emailed the director afterward and asked him if he would consider putting that part as a woman. And I told him all the reasons why I thought it would work as a woman. And he actually gave me the part. Since I've learned that's probably not what you should do, is to email a director and say all those things, but it worked for me that time. So everything's been unconventional with me. So that was my very first play. And it was.
Oh my gosh. Okay. There is so much to unpack. These are even things that we're going to go all the way back to the teaching aspect. You and I spoke about, you know, getting together and sharing, you know, this part, but we did not have this part of the conversation. Dixie, I taught kindergarten. It was my first job too. And I have a history, I'm a history specialization too. So the commonality there, I totally understand that. And I will agree with you. I've said this many times, to family, friends, and on the show, is that Kindergarten was the greatest job I ever had. It taught me everything, just like the little saying, I learned everything I needed to know about life in kindergarten, about human behavior, about, you know, helping our neighbor and all those things. But it was the most exhausting job I'd ever had as well.
Oh, there's no way I could do that now.
No, I know. It's so true. I have to ask, what was your greatest takeaway just as a kindergarten teacher?
Because there's probably nothing in life other than learning to love and like yourself. In fact, that was my motto in kindergarten. The most important thing we ever learn to do is love ourselves. The second most important thing we ever learn to do is read. And every time a child would, when it would click, he would learn the sounds of those letters, but it would click and he would go, oh, that's cat or that's mouse or that's whatever word he's looking at. And he's beginning to actually get it. And you see the light go on. And to think I had any part of that, of teaching him to read, it's amazing.
It truly is. And that was always my takeaway. When anybody asked me, what would you like the best? It was like the tingles. I still get them. Like I'm getting them right now. The goosebumps I got when I was a part of the journey of a child learning to read. So that's interesting that you felt the same way. But something you just said too is something I wanted to go into, learning to love yourself. And I think that is so important. It was important when you became a teacher, it was important when I became a teacher. It is important as we're living our life in 2024 right now. If we love ourselves, we will tend to ourselves. We will give ourselves health and abundance and strive for that in the areas that we need, because we're moving in the direction that I believe we're called to be, to move in. You know, God pulled us and he planted seeds, and you have treasures and gifts that I don't, as I do, that the Bobby Doo doesn't. And so there's so many things and similarities there. But I just wanted to recircle this theme, is that you had a whole career, Dixie, in the education field. And then when you retired, you got this bug for acting. So you didn't just retire and ride off into the oblivion and sit around and, you know, eat bonbons and watch TV. You had a desire to continue to love yourself and be and listen for that calling. And you responded. And it was this acting bug. And you, yes, you had a brother. Yes, you had some great friends and you took it, but you moved your feet. You signed up for a class at the community college. You were with a group of friends that said, hey, we're just going to do this little play together for family and friends. And then one thing led to another. So it doesn't mean that we have to start with a success. And I want to speak to this. This is the reason I'm kind of setting it up, is that sometimes, you know, myself included, we believe we can't do something until we're perfect at it. So we don't want to take a risk, because with risk comes the potential for failure. With risk comes us stepping outside of the box into a realm that we're not comfortable with or familiar with. Like, we had training to be a teacher, right? And then you get your own class and you realize, oh my gosh, I didn't have training in all of it. Yes. And I think that's the way that we should look at any new thing or the work that's calling us, is that we may have a desire and we're fulfilling that, but we're not going to be perfect. I want to talk about your first rejection when you tried out for a role and you didn't get it. Talk us through that, because that is the typical life of what happens in acting, right? You don't win all of them, right?
Oh, no. Unless you're Meryl Streep, maybe. But
yeah.
No. Not usually. No, absolutely. That's not been my experience. Anyway, I'll put it that way. The first time I was rejected, it was no big deal, really, because I didn't expect to get the part. I just went to try to see what it was like to audition. I had no expectations of getting cast because I was just so green. I really had no idea what I was doing. And I'm sure it showed right there in the audition, which is fine though. I mean, you got to start somewhere. You got a first day of teaching, you go in green, and you really, like you said, we're really not all that prepared from the training to go in there to the real life. And there's real kids with their own real problems. And so it's the same with this. And you just have to get more comfortable with each time. I have made the mistake of, as it went along, of really wanting the part too much, of preparing and maybe even over preparing and wanting this role with all my heart and soul and going in there and then not getting it. That can be devastating. And the first time that happened, it taught me, you got to let go of that. You got to let go of wanting this role too much, because so much of it is out of your control.
Absolutely. Let's unpack that. Pardon me for the interruption, but I think that is huge. I want to unpack that for the audience. And I want to go back to when you said that I put my heart in the preparation, maybe too much, maybe talk us through that, because I think in the real world, we sometimes, all of us fall into that. We set ourselves up. And then when it doesn't happen, we just retreat to a place that we don't even try anymore because we had one setback. So unpack that for us, please, because I think your words are filled with wisdom.
It does. It can devastate you. It can put you to the core, like, wow. And, I mean, I was even asked to audition for this particular role. And then when you're asked and you don't get it, that's even more confusing. Like, wow, did I really blow that audition? It didn't feel like it. For me, at least, this is what I have to do. I guess that's the only way I can tell it. If I'm disappointed, I am. I need to feel the disappointment. Sometimes I may even need to pout about it for a few days, really just, you know, not push aside the feelings because they're there. It is disappointing. Then you have to go ahead and move on. I wasn't cast about a week ago for a part I tried out that I really kind of wanted to. I'm not as devastated as before, but I'm still disappointed. So what I'm doing at this point is reevaluating. Okay, what can I do differently? One thing, I'm still so green at this. I've only been doing this for 5 years, and I'm up against people who did it as kids, you know, their whole life. And there's not that many roles for people in my age group. So there's a ton of competition every time I go to audition for a role. And I have to remember that, you know, but I also have to go in and with some confidence and just do my best. And when it doesn't happen, it doesn't. And so I've got a choice of either letting it put me aside forever, just making the decision, this isn't the right thing for you, maybe is the right thing. If you really know this is not where you have talent or where you think you really need to be, sometimes that is what you learn by some kind of setback, regardless of what it is. But if not, if you've still got this desire, if it's still there, then you pick yourself up and move on. And be realistic. And what is it I can do? How can I improve? You talked about it as being a career, and I have had quite a few roles over the past 5 years, but my definition of career is somebody that would pursue it professionally, that wants to make a living out of it. And that's not me by a long shot. No, I wouldn't choose that, even if that were probably possible. Because for me, it's now fun. I get a role, I never get paid for these. I did one time. I got paid about $10 once, but so I'm always laughing that I'm a paid actress. But you roles in most community theaters and places where I've been, it is volunteer. And so it's people that are there that's just because they really and truly want to be, or they really do want to be an actor professionally, and this is good training for them.
One of the pillars on the Amanda Rollert Show is giving back to the community. And I think what you just said is we can't give back and expect a payment for that. That is not truly in the volunteer category. And what you're saying that you do along with everybody else is you're in that pillar of community. How am I giving back to the community? Because you're not being paid. You're being vulnerable for winning roles or getting passed for roles, and you're finding all of those things out about yourself. But at the end, you are truly giving of your time to the community by what you do and what your colleagues that you do this along with. So take us through a little bit about how does that work for you? Like when you know that you are doing something and, you know, you're having a role that is actually giving back to the community by what you do, the hours of practice and preparation for a show, how does that fill your bucket today?
There's just something about it, about becoming somebody else that's just very fulfilling, I guess is what it is. You have to tap into your own emotions and express them through being somebody else. And that's very rewarding. But the whole process of being in a play, I can't tell you the number of friends I have made. This, you were talking about giving back to a community. Community theaters do that immensely. So many people get a lot of pleasure from going to a play at a community theater, being in a play. You make this bond because you're together nearly every day for at least 2 or 3 months. And that's how you really do form friendships, is when you've got this common goal, you're working together, you're trying to help one another, because that's how the play is going to be its best, is if you support each other in this play. I've met some wonderful people in theater. Community theaters serve all age groups, from kids all the way up to people my age. And so you're all truly in a community in a play, because generally there's people of all age groups and ethnic groups. And, you know, I've worked with every kind of person like that. So that's very fulfilling and rewarding. And it gets to the community in that we do get to know one another, you know, these different age groups, and truly become friends. And generally after the play, you keep up with them too. Not everyone, but a good majority of the people, you follow them on Facebook and excited to see them when you're at another play, or you'll go see another play they are in, or they'll come see you. So you've really formed some real bond here. And it's the community theater community is vast, and it's exciting, and I just love it.
You know, you've hit on a couple of things that I think is very important. It's worthy of circling back to again, too, Dixie, is that I believe one of the things missing in our world in present day is that our kinship to the people around us, to the communities around us, to the people in our subdivision, to the people in our church, to the people in our social clubs. A lot of us, we don't have those anymore, or because of technology, or, you know, everybody's in their own space and their own phone and their own, you know, and we're not connecting, purposely connecting to others. And I think that piece of community is the part that gets slighted the most, is because something has happened in our world to say, you know, everybody in their own silo. I'm not in yours, you're not in mine. And then I don't care. And I don't mean that with such harsh terminology, but if I'm in my own world and you're in yours, that care, that deep, genuine human quality of caring is diminished sometimes, which is all the other pillars, you know, the healthy mind, healthy body, healthy family, healthy work. We can put all those together within ourselves or within our family units in what we do. It's the community piece, I've always said, that pulls us the most into helping other people, developing other people, giving, truly giving of our heart, because that's the only thing that is so, it's outside of us. And we have to go take those steps and make that effort to make our community, whatever that is. You know, you may be coaching a little league team. Some may be coaching peewee football. You may be coaching, you know, your child's volleyball, or you may be teaching a class, a community class somewhere. And in your case, you're giving back because you're coming together with community colleagues to create and share your gift of acting, to put on to have a play and to tell a story. But then those connections, as you've just so eloquently stated, they don't just last for 2 and 3 months. They have probably last, some of them, over the last 5 years that you've had. You go see others, they come see you, and then it just multiplies and multiplies and multiplies. And I think if we're lacking in one thing in our world today, it's that connection piece. It's making those true connections outside to the community, because when we have to feel again for our neighbor, you know, that's when they used to have, you know, the kids would run up and down the street and everybody would play, and you would talk to your neighbor across the street or your neighbor next door, and you would know them by name. You would invite them for dinners. You know, everybody was connected. And now a lot of people don't even know who lives next door to them or who lives across the street from them. And how does that happen? I just believe there needs to be more of the great work that you do coming outside of ourselves and connecting. You didn't have to do this. You're not getting paid to do this, but you're doing it out of this desire in your heart. But look at the reward. So aside from, you know, all the talk that we're having about this, what are some treasures that have come into your life because you took the step to go outside of your box and you put yourself out there into the community? These are victories that you didn't even know that you would be getting. And I think you alluded to some, but let's go back so the audience can say, oh my gosh, because Dixie did this, look at the return that she wasn't even counting on. So can you share a couple of the top ones that come to mind for you?
The biggest surprise I ever had is an audition that I was cast. I auditioned for the play Steel Magnolias. And that is a very popular play that a lot of people want to be in. And there was a lot of competition. And again, I had no expectations of getting cast, but I wanted to go. If nothing else, just to go to say hello to a lot of the people that I knew that were going to try out too. So I went. And I was actually cast as Clarine, which was the part I would have chosen for myself if I could have chosen one. I nearly fainted when I saw my name there. Oh my God. Me? So that was a huge, huge surprise. And it was just a great experience. It was at this theater that's very old and majestic. And you stand on stage and this gorgeous theater is just right there in front of you. And the director couldn't have been any better. She's amazing. Absolutely amazing director. And I will always be grateful to her for giving me that opportunity. And in fact, she asked me for a favor not too long ago. I said, anything you want, what is it? There, you know, whatever you need. So that was one of the times when it was really surprising and amazing and like a dream come true type thing. And I've had other roles too. I recently did a play called The Laramie Project, which broadened my horizons on, are you familiar with that play at all? It's about,
I'm not, no.
It's about this kid, Matthew Shepard. It's really about the town of in Wyoming, Laramie, Wyoming, where this all took place. He was a gay young man, about 20 years old, who was beaten to death. And it's a sad, sad, sad story because of his sexuality. But it's really more about the town and their reaction to it, how it brought the town together, how it made them question their own thoughts and their own prejudices. And it was an amazing play to do. And it talk about a spectrum of people that were in this play. I got to know so many different people that were young and old and gay and not, and everything was just amazing. And so it gave me the opportunity to experience something like that I probably wouldn't have had I not been in acting. There's just been a lot of different things. I wrote a play myself, which was done last fall.
Really? Tell us about that.
That started with this little, back to the beginning of that little theater class that I took in the spring. And she wasn't going to have classes in the summer. But I didn't want that. I didn't want to not have drama class. So I asked some of the people if they would want to just meet on our own and just run monologues or bring in a script to read or, you know, just to practice over the summer. And we went to lunch one day and there were four of us there. And I said, you know, if you could have any part you could have, you know, if somebody said you pick the part, you can have it, what would you want to do? And everybody said something. One of them, the one man that was there, he said, well, I would love for us to sing and dance, you know, like rock and roll and have a great time on stage. And I'd love to do that. That would be my dream part. And I went home and thought about that. And I thought, you know, there's just no way that we could ever pull off being rock and roll artists and teenagers singing and dancing rock and roll on the stage. But I thought about it. I said, but we could be a class reunion that we were having. Our 50th class reunion that we went to school in the 50s or early 60s or somewhere back in the rock and roll times, that we were supposed to come dressed as we dressed in high school. I mean, that would be believable. And that he was this old guy from the high school that was sang back in high school. So that's what I did. I wrote a play called The Reunion that was about that, about this high school group that came together. The theme was that it was about your high school fantasy, and that there was this big full moon and all of their fantasies came true throughout the play. And his was to sing this song. And so there was a romance from the high school that they never did get to date in high school, but they had a crush on one another. So they get back together at this reunion and the crush is still kind of there. And he sings this love song to her. Anyway, it goes on and on. So that was it. And that was written just prior to the pandemic. And we were going to try to do it. Everybody, to my surprise, I only wrote that play for us to practice in that little group that we were doing during the summer. I just brought it there and I thought, well, let's just, you know, after, again, we can play with it, you know, at least he can sing and dance in our class or whatever. To my surprise, they actually liked it. We showed it to our teacher. She actually liked it. I was shocked. But so for 4 years, we tried to do this play. We did do a Zoom version of it back in the pandemic. But it just didn't turn out. It was okay. It was fine, but it wasn't the same as doing it on the stage. And they wouldn't let it go. Come on, we've got to do this on the stage. We have to just keep doing this. We finally did. We finally did it last fall at the theater in Conroe. And it turned out just fine. You know, it turned out okay. And it was still those four people that we had originally done this. People had come and gone with it. The cast was more than four, so we had to include more people. And it was a challenge. Oh my gosh, that was such a challenge through the whole thing with copyrights, and because we had a lot of music in it. And that was something new I learned about, that you can't just put in any song you want. You've got to have permission to do it. So it was quite an exciting thing. To see your own words being performed is quite rewarding. I'll put it that way. It was really great. And the turnout was really good from the community.
Oh my gosh. This came to fruition finally. I mean, you had to go through the pandemic and you had this idea. Dixie, I think there's some future in that for some different plays. It sounds like a lovely theme. It sounds like a great piece. I love the growth that happens within us when we take on a challenge that we didn't, you know, when we climb the mountain and you said, gosh, there were so many things. I believe it's the journey that's always even better than the destination, because the things that we learn about ourselves. So what would you say to the things that you learned about yourself in the writing and the producing of this play? Like, you would you have ever thought back before you retired as a teacher that you would have written a play that was produced? And just because of where you decided to take your life after you retired as a teacher?
You know, when I think back on it, and you were talking about this seed that's probably been in you all this time, when I taught kindergarten, I would do plays with them all the time. You know, I would have them, we sang the alphabet song and I made a little play out of it, we learned about dental health and I had them be teeth and this, you know, anyway, what a great time doing that. I mean, I was always, when I think about it, I was always making them do some kind of play. And because it was fun for me. I think, and then they enjoyed it too, but it was just fun. So I think that's always been there. And then it just hit me. I'm a cancer survivor from right in my middle 60s. And after that, it was like, I've been given this chance. I'm still cancer free. Thank the Lord.
Thank you, Lord.
Yeah. But I was thinking, why did I survive it? You know, this survivor guilt in a way, I guess. Okay, I've given this chance to live again, to not end my life now. So what am I going to do with it? You know, I owe it to the people who didn't survive to make the most of the life that I have. And when I saw the friend on the stage, and this kind of hit me, and so this, it just kind of sent me in this direction. And it all hasn't been positive. As I've said, there has been heartbreak with it. There's a lot of work to it as well, which is enjoyable for me. The more I learn about it, I enjoy learning about it and making, well, I don't enjoy making mistakes, but I enjoy learning from them. And just moving forward with it, I have learned that I am going to fall and stumble and not be successful in everything. And not every director is going to love my performance or people in the audience. And not every play I do is going to be a Pulitzer Prize winner. Certainly the one I wrote was not. I will do make that distinction. It is the journey and it is learning, and I'll get the role next time. You know, I'll learn something from it. And as you said, maybe it's just that we get the roles we're expected to do, that things turn out the way they're supposed to. So this is, I feel like this is where I'm supposed to be at this point in time, and that I can't just throw away this life. I've got to go out and do something with it, something positive.
Oh, so profoundly said, Dixie. And thank you for sharing that. I know there is a purpose. There is a reason that we're still breathing here today on this earth, because there's music left in us, is what I say. There's a purpose for what we do. We just have to keep saying, guide me, show me, let me, develop me. Sometimes I feel like I'm the rose bush, you know, prune me. I don't want to be pruned. I don't like this. It hurts a little bit, but I hope that I will bloom more beautifully once I am pruned and accept it with gratitude instead of fighting it because I don't want it at the time. Who wants to be pruned, right? We want it to be, you know, rainbows and roses everywhere we go and every day, and life isn't that way. If you were going to give advice to somebody wanting to start something new later in life, or maybe upon retirement, or shifting gears or whatever, if something's burning in somebody's heart, what advice would you give them if they want to start something new?
Well, my motto is, this is someday. You know, when you're younger, you think, oh, I'll go to Rome someday. I will do whatever someday. You know, sometimes you're so busy when you're younger, just getting a career or raising kids or whatever, that what you want for yourself comes someday. Well, this for me is someday. If I don't do this right now, if there's something I really want to do, if there's somewhere I really want to go, if there's something I really want to try, that is within reason for me to try it. Of course, there are things that I can't do, but if it is something that I can and I want to, this is it. I better do it right now, because I don't have that much time left, really, in all reality, to do everything I want to do. So that's how I look at it and try to tell myself every day, you know, this is it. This is someday. Go do what you want to do.
I love that. When you get a no or a setback, or you don't get a role, how do you get back on the horse and ride again?
Look to the next one. There's going to be something else. I look to my friends, that a friend of mine tried out for the same play and he didn't get cast either. So we looked at each other. Well, we're not done. We'll move on. You know, we'll do something else. So I get support from friends. And I do have to realize, especially in acting, this, maybe there was absolutely nothing I did wrong or anything I could have done any better. It's just maybe the other person looked different from me and that's what they chose. So I'm have to learn not to take it so personally or to feel like a failure.
I wanted to bring the audience back to something you said earlier, which is, there was a role that you were asked to audition for and you weren't cast for that. I have often in my life, you know, there's been many things that I have done or tried to do or whatever. And even to the audience, you know, there's people that I meet, myself included, I was asked to apply for a role, apply for a position in a company that, and I didn't get that position. I thought, why was I asked to do this? And I put my heart and my soul.
Why did you ask me?
Why did you ask me? And you said something very, very appropriate, that you're like, you look at yourself, gosh, was I that bad? Did it come across? And it's not, it is not. You just scooped it up by what you just said. It's like, you know, I realized that maybe I didn't have the look, or maybe there was something, some dynamic that we only know our side of the story, right? So if I hold up a book and there's writing on my side, but the back cover has nothing on there, and I said, hey, what do you see? And I'd say, I see writing on this. And you say, no, I don't. There's no writing on this. It's our perspective. It's the perspective that we enter into whatever the reality. And I think what you said is so profound. And I think it's a great takeaway for all of us. And especially now, as we're paving the way for our most abundant life in 2024, is that, you know what? Some days it's going to be great days. Some days we're going to have huge successes and the smiles and the growth is going to be like, oh my gosh, yes, you're going to feel like you're jumping, you've just climbed the mountain. And then there's some days that are going to spin us on our heels and make us scratch our head and say, why? This doesn't make any sense. And it could cause us to recoil. It could cause us to stop living. But you also said something, Dixie, is that, you know what? You're here. You are here. I am here. Our audience is here for a purpose because God wants us here right now. So we can't recoil in the corner. We've got to live. We've got this one and only life that we have, and we've got to live it abundantly in all these areas. And I'm inspired by you, Miss Dixie Cooper, because I think you're living your best life now. You have given to children. You have given to this country. You've given yourself as a professional, and you're still giving, and you're giving in that area of community. But yet I'm hearing all of your triumphs. I'm hearing all the wonderful things that you're getting to experience because you took that first step first and you did it. Is there anything else that you want to share with the audience before we kind of wrap things up today?
Just if you're not happy with your life, who is it goes, well, that's not working, change it. You know, you've got it within you to change it. Just be realistic. You know, what is it that you can change? What is it that you can do? I know I could never be a ballerina or a gymnast at this point in my life. That's just not realistic. But I can try and go be in community theater in plays. I can be the best wife I can be. I can, you know, be the best grandmother I can be, you know, all of those things. And that makes me happy when I do that, you know, and don't be afraid to try something new. I mean, what's the worst thing that can happen? You don't succeed at it? Well, okay, so what? So what? Then that just wasn't for me. I'll move on to something else. There's a lot of people that come to auditions and they may audition once. And I remember this one lady after audition, she said, well, I'm glad I got that out of my system. She could tell this was not for her. She wasn't going to do this. That was just not her cup of tea. And she probably never auditioned again, but she did go and try it. At least she knows that.
Wow.
So, you know, it's just explore yourself. Think about it. What does give you joy? What does give you inspiration? You know, who are you really? You know, for some of us, it's going to be a quiet life at home and with your computer writing or whatever. That really is fulfilling for a lot of people. For others, it's not. And for some, it's to be in the best physical condition they can be. Others, it's not that we don't want to be physically fit, but we just don't have to win the marathon to make that fulfilling for us. So we're all just so individual. And that's the best advice I can give you. Just figure yourself out and go for it.
Oh my gosh. So Dixie, I just want to say thank you so much for sharing your story, sharing your journey, sharing the loveliness of the similarities that you and I have didn't even know within our teaching careers, but then being an inspiration for finding joy in something that was even after your professional career and something that you're loving. And I could see it on you. You look fantastic. I'm sure doing things and doing something that you love to do, I think it just makes us feel younger, don't you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it physically makes you feel better, feel younger. Absolutely. If anybody does want to pursue acting, I would suggest that they do contact, if there is a community theater in their area, contact them and see if there are classes or any classes in their area for acting. That probably would be a really good place to start, or just try to meet other actors. There are Facebook pages that have acting, a lot of them that have acting connections there that you could search acting sites and see what comes up in your area. So, you know, if it's not acting, just whatever it is, go out there and see how you can learn about it, what you can do.
It's putting one foot in front of the other and answering that little call, you know, that's in our heart, you know, in those quiet moments that you're saying, if I, over the last probably 4-6 weeks. We were preparing in December for 2024, and we had a lot of pre-work that we did, you know, with the show and things. And one of the things I led with was if success were guaranteed, really, failure wasn't an option, and you could do whatever you wanted to do, what would that be? What would you be doing? And I love your statement back, you know, I'm not going to be a ballerina, but I want to be this. Then we're giving you permission, no matter if you're 10 or 21 or 41 or 81, go do it. Go do it because it's in your heart. Dixie, I just thank you so much for joining me for this episode of the Amanda Rollert Show and for your inspiration, for your leadership, your vision of really what it takes to support abundant living today, which is salt, which is really what we are all striving for, to have that salt, that passion in our life. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for having me. This is a great podcast for people to listen to. So thank you for having me as your guest.
Oh, so happy. And you know what? Maybe as we venture on, there'll be another topic or something that we'll just bring you back on. See what's happening in Dixie's world in the months and months to come. How about that? Would you come back?
Oh, absolutely.
Great. Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for joining us. And to the audience, thank you for tuning in for another week of the Amanda Rollert Show, where we support abundant living today in all areas of our life. And we want the best for you. I want the best for your 2024. So take some challenges, take some risks, and go live your best life. Thanks for joining us, everybody. Come back next week for another episode of the show. See you, everybody. Bye now.
Thanks for listening to The Amanda Rollert Show, a podcast to get your salt back. Share this episode with a friend and tag us on Instagram. See you next time.